A survey carried out recently by the New Zealand Classification Office has found that half of New Zealanders have at least one belief based on misinformation. The survey's title, The Edge of the Infodemic, Challenging Misinformation in Aotearoa, June 2021. Kate Hannah is the project lead for the Disinformation Project at Auckland University's Te Pūnaha Matatini, and she joins me now. Kia ora, Kate.
Kia ora, Susanna.
Well, tell us about this survey. It has a rather ominous name.
Well, I think it's kind of a prescient name because we know for lots of reasons that we are on lots of edges of all sorts of things at the moment. We are hopefully cresting the wave, the edge of this pandemic that we've all been experiencing for the last 15 months. And we also, a lot of us seem to be from the data in the survey, aware that things have somewhat changed in the information landscapes that we're familiar with, from places like Radio New Zealand, the news, our newspapers, and then the other more newer sources of information that we get our news from. And so I feel like it sounds a bit scary, but an edge is a good thing because from the edges we find out what experiences are like for people who are not maybe in the centres of conversation.
Let's look at the survey itself before we get to the results. Why was it carried out? Who was surveyed? When was it done? And what were the questions exactly?
So I consulted on the survey. I didn't conduct the survey. So the Classification Office conducted the survey. But what we really encouraged the Classification Office to think about and look through was the idea of mis and malinformation across Aotearoa New Zealand and try to get a really representative sample. So 2,300 New Zealanders have been surveyed for the survey, and it's highly representative of our most marginalised communities, those people who are often on the edges, like I mentioned before. And also there's a special, I think it's a 300-person sample of rangatahi between the ages of 16 and 18. And so that really gives us a really leading-edge voice on what's happening in the disinformation landscape for those young people. So it's super exciting for those reasons. And what this office did was really carefully think about making sure that as many people as possible I could identify with the questions and understand what was going on in terms of the breadth of the questions. So that's why they're not necessarily just focused on perhaps the most immediate types of misinformation that people would think about, perhaps related to COVID-19, but really broadly across a number of different disinformation pieces or conspiracy narratives that we might all be familiar with from the past around moon landings and 9/11 and other such things.
Why was the survey carried out?
Well, I think the motivation for the survey is very much that we don't have really good data up until now about what's happening in Aotearoa. We have a lot of assumptions based on international similar types of surveys or international research that is often highly quantitative. So it just merely looks at the number of people who are accessing perhaps less reliable news articles or the number of people who are sharing or elevating stories from less reliable sources. And what this survey does is actually ask people who live in Aotearoa what their experience of mis and disinformation is. And that's a wonderful, wonderful thing for us to understand because it is a pressing issue for Aotearoa and for the world. But we need to understand what it looks like here.
So I want to hold off on getting to the results of the survey because I'm interested first in what the Disinformation Project is that you lead.
So the Disinformation Project that I lead is we started out in February 2020 looking at COVID-19 disinformation. But we were a group of colleagues who had been planning to come together to look more in depth at the use of scientific or pseudoscientific data and language by groups ranging from alt-right or white supremacist or racist groups. We've been planning to look at that stuff from 2021 onwards. And then when the pandemic hit, we decided that we needed to sort of kick off more quickly and look at how science or pseudoscience or language around science and around belief was being used by people around the COVID-19 pandemic. So we've been monitoring quantitatively, so counting, that kind of counting I talked about before, where we measure the number of times things are shared on social media, but we also do qualitative research on the actual text of what people are sharing and how people are understanding and expressing themselves around this information. What happened really quickly with the focus on COVID-19 was that the link back to that extreme racist or alt-right text became really quickly linked. So within the COVID-19 disinformation space, there are clear links to those languages of white supremacism, racial superiority, eugenics, and other themes that we had been planning to study from 2021 onwards.
So let's focus on the survey, the edge of the infodemic challenging misinformation in Aotearoa. What were the results?
So I think it's really clear that we need to understand that the results are actually heartening. I really expected that we would see that there would be a number of New Zealanders who had some level of belief in aspects of mis and disinformation across that wide spectrum of the type of material that the Classification Office surveyed New Zealanders on. And we do see that. We see that, you know, one in three New Zealanders have some level of belief in an aspect of disinformation. But we also see that, you know, an overwhelming number of New Zealanders, more than 80%, think that it's a real problem. And so people are experiencing disinformation, they're coming across it, they're trying to come up with ways of countering it or understanding it better, so they're doing their own work. They think it's a real problem and they also want people to do things about it. And so I see that as a really immensely positive result, because it means it's time for us to start the kind of conversation that you and I are having tonight about what is the problem and then how do we as Aotearoa New Zealand deal with it.
So let's just look at these words, if we can. Misinformation. Absolutely. And disinformation. What's the difference?
So misinformation is often more, in the longer terms, described as false and misleading information. So that's where the mis comes from, that misleading. And it's information that is false, that hasn't necessarily been created with the intention of causing harm. So people might have a really strong level of genuine belief in it. Disinformation is information that is false and has been deliberately created to harm a person or a social group or a category of people or an organisation or a country. So I guess for lots of listeners, disinformation sits more alongside what you might call propaganda. So sometimes it is state-sponsored. It's ideological and it's politically motivated, and it sometimes has, you know, as I said, state actors been involved in picking it, or in this current disinformation and misinformation landscape, pseudo-state or semi-state actors. So that would be groups from other countries that have a particular political bent or lobbying voice, who are trying to manipulate conversations in Aotearoa, New Zealand, to more likely meet their particular lobbying aspect. And so that's the difference. Misinformation is often can become disinformation when it starts to harm people or groups of people.
So with regards to the survey and the results that have just been released, the focus was on challenging misinformation in Aotearoa. How did the problem show itself in the results?
The problem showed itself in really expected ways, and that most people who live in New Zealand, most New Zealanders identified that the two things they thought they'd heard the most misinformation about were COVID-19 and also American politics. So those were the two primary places or concepts or narratives, as we would call it in the research, around which they had kind of heard about these pieces of misinformation. But remembering that in the survey, disinformation and misinformation aren't separated. We don't expect people who are answering the survey to be able to necessarily categorise things that have been intentionally created to cause harm and things that are merely false and misleading. And that harm piece is quite hard to establish sometimes, because sometimes actors or people can share something that was originally created not to be harmful in ways that then cause harm. So those distinctions get kind of that get blurry for lots of people. So I thought that was really interesting that those were the two features that New Zealanders noticed the most. And we did also see some more, I guess one might call it left field conspiracy beliefs around false flag events, around, as I said, the moon landing or 9/11 or such things. And those are sort of part of narratives that a lot of us, I'm a Gen Xer, so, you know, we grew up with watching videos about how those things might be false and kind of being taught to question authority at all times. And so those are sort of parts of cultural expectations. And then obviously we also have different communities in Aotearoa have different experiences of the state and state interventions. And so those different groups will also have different responses to conspiracy narratives when they're presented to people.
Were there any results from the survey that surprised or shocked you?
I was surprised at how many New Zealanders thought that we really needed to do something about it. And I was really interested that, you know, it was more than 80% of New Zealanders surveyed thought that misinformation was such a problem that something needed to be done. And I was really interested to see that people weren't sure who or how that something would be done. And so people talked about whether it was government responsibility, whether it was individual responsibility, whether it was the responsibility of, say, platforms or media organisations where disinformation might be getting presented. And so that's the, you know, the sort of next step, really, for me. It's really clear that New Zealanders want to try and understand how things could be done in ways that still make sure that we keep our freedom of expression, because most dis and misinformation ends up not being illegal. It's merely false.
And so do you believe that there's a change that's required there, or is a disinformation project looking at how that can be resolved or handled better?
Well, I think what we're looking at in the disinformation project is how do we understand what disinformation and misinformation do to people and communities here in New Zealand, and then how do we reflect back to platforms, social media platforms, large multinational corporations and governments, the impact of those harms for those people who are impacted by mis and disinformation. How do we make sure that that is a conversation that's been constantly had, so that those communities in New Zealand who are most harmed by misinformation and disinformation, remembering that disinformation is ideologically or politically motivated and is designed to harm people or groups of people. And then how do we make sure that, as I said, is an ongoing conversation, so that when things change, when language or images or themes or memes change, those platforms and governments and regulators understand that and can be more responsive. And that doesn't mean censorship or classification. That means conversations around what is safe, who should be able to see this kind of content, how do we respond when people are being harassed online, when that harassment is politically motivated or racially motivated. How do we support them? What kind of packages can we wrap around them for care, for well-being, for manaakitanga? And that's the kind of conversations that we're trying to have in a research way over the next few months.
Is misinformation / disinformation evolving during the course of the COVID-19 pandemic?
It has absolutely evolved in the last 15 months and over the last few years. And what has happened is that, as I said earlier, that the link, that the steps from something that might be health and well-being based, so a concern around a novel virus that people don't really, broadly understand yet, or a novel vaccine that is new and therefore, you know, people have questions about, through to much more extremist language and discourse, that step has become much more reduced. So a year ago, to get to quite extremist language, you would have to go quite far down the rabbit hole, as it gets described. These days, you can do it in about one click from just looking at certain pages and asking questions that are really genuinely important questions that people should be able to ask, because, you know, that's one of the key principles of democracy, is that people have access to good information for making decisions for themselves and their families.
With regards to assisting people to make those decisions, any guidance, any advice as a researcher?
Yeah, so one of the things that we've been really focusing on when we're talking to communities and whānau and hapū about these things is, you know, when information makes you feel scared and makes you feel emotional and is using really heightened, dramatic language, using their voice in particular types of ways, maybe shouting or you know, using a really emotive type of tone and of voice, all of those things are kind of often indications that the information you've been presented with is not necessarily the most scientifically or evidence-based information. And the other thing is to always ask, you know, who is benefiting or profiting or you know, making money, to be perfectly blunt, from sharing this information. So is somebody trying to sell you something? Are they going to, you know, make money from the thing that they are saying is a substitute for the vaccine? How are they benefiting? Are they asking you to subscribe to their YouTube channel? You know, all of these things are personal financial benefits. And those are some of the ways in which you might notice that that person isn't as reliable or that that group isn't as reliable as you would hope. And then the other thing is accountability. So how is that personal group accountable to you and your community? Are they someone you can go back to for more information, the way that you can go back to your local librarian or your teacher or your GP and just say, hey, we talked about this thing and I've still got a few questions, so I'd like to, you know, come back and ask some more questions. You know, accountability is a key part of how trust is established and built. And so people need to be accountable to you if you're going to be able to use them as a resource for your informed decision making.
A pleasure to speak with you tonight, Kate Hannah. Thank you very much for your insights.
No worries, Suzanne. Lovely to talk to you too.